We're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back on to start another football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. That's double your initial deposit just for signing up. Don't forget to use promo code NFL100. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports.
At the 50, at the 10, at the 5, still going.
Look at him go.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another edition of Bullseye, the UB Bulls football podcast. I'm your host, Kyrie Demos, and today we've got an episode that breaks down a little bit of what happened last week with the Bulls and their matchup against Western Michigan, and we also look ahead to their matchup with Kent State. So, you know, as the Bulls were able to, you know, open up conference play, you know, it was a tough one, you know, real tight game, you know, just falling short to the Broncos with a 24-17 loss. And, you know, it was really a back and forth game all throughout. Western really got things going early on, you know, converting on a 4th-and-3 call, you know, to extend a 16 play drive that led to a 7-0 lead for them. But Ron Cook Jr. was able to take the next possession, take a 55-yard touchdown to the house. And, you know, that's something we're going to get back to later on in the show. But, you know, just thinking about, you know, looking ahead from there, you know, UB was trying to take advantage of a Western Michigan missed field goal in the first quarter, extending early into the second quarter. Keon Williams got going a little bit from there, a couple catches back to back, but, you know, a strip sack fumble of Kyle Van Treese ended that drive prematurely. And, you know, it was tough to see because, you know, I'm going to pull the stat up here. I actually tweeted this during the game. Rather unique statistic for the Bulls. You know, the Bulls have been one of the more dominant offensive lines, not even just in the MAC conference, but overall in college football over the last handful of years. But, you know, they were taking advantage of there. So, yeah, just looking at the stat here, it was Zaire Barnes who was the one who recorded the strip sack fumble. It was just the second time since November of 2019 that Kyle Van Treese had been sacked. Unreal statistic there. But, you know, again, it was something that really sparked the Broncos moving forward. They were able to, you know, drive down again and, you know, get into the red zone. And but fortunately for the Bulls, they were able to get a goal line stand right before the half. You know, you know, moving forward from there, they were able to build a 10-7 lead, you know, on an Alex McNulty 37-yarder, which capped a 13-play drive for the Bulls. You know, that was a really pivotal moment. You know, things were looking great just coming out of the half, taking the lead there. Western actually ended up missing a second field goal in the action. But, you know, that's when things really turned. The fortune for the Bulls really turned from there. You know, obviously I mentioned that 37-yard field goal, but for UB's offense, you know, things really, really got stagnant. You know, their next four possessions were 3-and-outs, and they directly turned to. So Western had a turnover on downs after the first 3-and-out. Then they were able to the Broncos were then able to convert a field goal to knot things at 10. Then, you know, this is probably the most pivotal point of the game. After UB's third consecutive 3-and-out, you know, the Bulls were able to hold the Broncos, you know, third and all long. And they were looking like they were going to get off the field, but Kadafi Wright had an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty called against him. He batted a ball down, but you know, it was such a circumstantial situation. He bats the ball down and was frustrated with himself that he didn't intercept it. So he immediately spiked the ball. But of course, you know, that's something that, you know, he shouldn't have done, or, you know, obviously the refs aren't going to let you get away with that. So, just thinking of that play, that led to Caleb Ellaby, the Western Michigan quarterback, connecting with Sky Moore, on a 64-yard touchdown. And that was really the sequence that did the Bulls in, because you then turned that around with another three and out, and then Ladarius Jefferson was able to cap an 11 play drive for the Broncos with a touchdown to cap a pretty strong day for himself. And you know, UB was able to get back on the board late. You know, with Vantrease finding the end zone himself with his legs in the red zone, but it was just a little bit too late. You know, this was really a game that you shot yourself in the foot late, I'll say. You know, just thinking about being up 10-7 after the first half, and you know, being deadlocked at 10 apiece with, you know, just like roughly a third of the game left to play. You know, it really seemed as though, you know, overtime might be in the equation, or, you know, whatever the case was, just a tight finish. But, you know, just thinking of how UB, you know, some of the things that happened down the stretch for the Bulls, you know, that really held them back from being able to pull out this victory. Just looking at some of the numbers here, it was not similar to what happened with the ODU game, where it was really a tale of two halves. It was really just a stretch in the fourth quarter that got the Bulls in. And it seems to be a theme at this point, you know, in the three losses, we'll get to actually some of the press conference sound that we got from after the game. So, but just thinking of the three losses, you know, I talked with Coach Molinguist about this. There were plays in all three games that the Bulls have lost thus far this season that if they had made them, you know, those are much tighter games. You know, I think of the Nebraska game very vividly, because just for the fact that, you know, the Bulls were deadlocked down a score. It looked like they were going to be down a score heading in the half. But, you know, to be able to have a three and out, followed that by, you know, the long Martinez run to set up a score before the half, and even just turning the ball over from there. And then I believe the Cornhuskers got a field goal then the half from there. But even just thinking about also too the Coastal game, you know, just some of the plays that that the team, you know, missed out on early in the first half, and, you know, trying to play catch up in the second half. So, you know, UB really has had its moments this year of, you know, really being on the cusp, really just being right there and being so close and to closing in on victory. So, you know, it's tough to see when a team is really trying to establish itself and is trying to make things right, you know, for Mo Linguist and his return to the program, especially now being him being the head guy and everything. He seems to be having, you know, the players on the same page. He seems to be having, you know, the core really leading the group. You know, some of those upperclassmen like Kyle Vantrease, quarterback, linebacker James Patterson, even thinking of, you know, Keon Williams as well. So, you know, it's tough to see in that regard, to see the Bulls have those struggles to not be able to pull the games out late. So just, again, looking at some of the numbers here. Hold on, just pulling these up now. Now, Keon Williams was really the standout offensively for the Bulls. You know, he had another game, another 100-yard game for him. Back-to-back weeks now, you know, 6 receptions for 119 yards, and he's actually had over 90 yards receiving in 4 of his 5 games as a Bull. So, you know, this kid has really come over and just shown and proved why, you know, his worth coming into this offense and him warranting himself as a number one receiver for Kyle Van Trees. You know, he continues to show, and he's actually the leading receiver now in the MAC because of that. You know, just looking ahead again, or just looking back now again on, you know, some of the other statistics. Kyle Van Trees, you know, he was limited again in this action, you know, 12 of 22, 151 yards. And, you know, again, the pass attack outside of Keon Williams, things have been up and down in that regard. We'll actually be talking with Kyle about that with some of the presser audio that you guys will hear, so stay tuned for that. The running game, it's crazy to think about this, you know. So I mentioned Ron Cook's 55-yard rushing touchdown. He finished with 56 yards, but, you know, the team as a whole finished with 31. Dylan McDuffie had 8 for 38 and 4.8 yards per carry average. And Kevin Marks Jr. finished with 11 for 34. So, you know, it was tough sledding. Really was tough sledding for the Bulls. And, you know, that's something that I'm going to touch on, you know, when we talk a little bit about the Kent State game and, you know, what the Bulls could be looking forward to, or some things they may want to be considering heading into this matchup with the Golden Flashes. So, you know, just some stagnant play for the Bulls in the second half. They really on the offensive end, that really contributed, I think, to the win not coming home for the Bulls. You know, especially just thinking about how often that defense was on the field. You know, it's great to see, you know, guys like James Patterson with 14 tackles, Corey Gross with 10 tackles, Marcus Fuqua with 10 tackles. But, you know, those guys were on the field a ton, so a lot of snaps. So, you know, when you're getting those extra snaps, a lot of times that stuff is going to catch up to you. You know, just looking at the time of possession. I mean, this is, if you want to talk about, you know, yes, you only turned the ball over one time. Penalties were equal, 5-5. But obviously when you get outgained yardage-wise, that's one thing. But Western Michigan held a 40-minute, 6-second to 19-minute, 54-second time of possession advantage. So more likely than not, if you double up on your opponent in terms of time of possession, that bodes well. That often bodes well. So, you know, I'm not surprised just looking at that, and especially seeing how the Broncos close things out late. I'm not surprised that was the case with that there. Just also thinking about this game for the Bulls, you know, I don't think the Bulls should get too discouraged, though, either. You know, I know, obviously, having mentioned some of the things that, you know, held the Bulls back in this matchup, I totally understand. And, you know, yeah, when you miss narrowly, it still hurts. There's still a lot of bitterness. There's still a lot of pain that comes with that, which Coach Mo Linguist will touch on a little bit with these pressers, or with this presser later on. But at the same time, too, just thinking about it, you'd be lost to, you know, Big Ten program in Nebraska, you know, one of the top teams in the country, one of the top 20 teams in the country in Coastal Carolina. And then to Western Michigan, who by all accounts may be the best team this season in the MAC, you know, especially out of the MAC West. You know, they're looking to the Broncos seem to be poised to, you know, make a run to Detroit. So, you know, at this point, UB has nothing to really hang its head over. I think, like, as I mentioned before, there were things that UB really could have done to pull this one out, offensively, defensively, just even getting on off the field in certain situations. I know there were some big moments throughout, but in being able to knock Caleb Ellaby around a bit early on, but he was able to keep his poise, stay focused, and push through that to, you know, really shine late in the clutch So just looking back again, guys, you know, talking about this past game, here is the audio from the post game, just talking a little bit with Coach Mo Linguist, with James Patterson and Kyle Van Treese. So stay tuned. We'll be back after this.
Very tough and gritty bunch in the locker room that's very disappointed off the result that we just got. We put a lot of time and preparation into putting ourselves in the best position possible to go out there and start conference play 1-0. We didn't get that accomplished. I told the team that pain is a great lesson learner in life because it can teach you things. It teaches you things. You know, when you experience painful things, what it means, it's extremely important to you, which we have a lot of room for the guys with. This game is extremely important to them. And also, when things don't go right and they're hurtful, you got to laugh. You have to learn why they occurred. You have to learn the things you need to learn so they don't happen again. So, proud of the way the guys responded and competed. Obviously not happy with the result. Hats off to Western Michigan and Coach Lester. They did a really good job themselves, and the guys played hard. It was a hard-fought game, and we came out on top.
For the three, it was a five-straight drive. Inside the half, this guy went three out. And what was not wrong for the offense after you guys had that two-way drive?
I think, we've kind of experienced this a little bit twice, with ODU and now this week, where there's good coaches on both sides and people are going to make adjustments and they're going to make an emphasis on trying to stop what you do well. Really got to look at the film and see all the details of what the film says and maybe where all the stones occurred. And we'll assess everything. Yeah, we'll assess everything, but honestly, we were able to move the ball, put ourselves in a good position, and we had the one sack in the red zone in the first half that we could have got points off of. We didn't get that. And moved the ball up and down, kind of traded some series back and forth. And then in the second half, we made an emphasis on trying to get a couple things established that Western Michigan had taken away. And we just got to be ready to respond and really – kind of go to the next series of plays and next series of things that we need to do to move the ball effectively. So, again, we'll watch the film, we'll assess it, we'll look at everything and see what we got to get done so that doesn't occur again.
And you guys had a great stops and also the role that they missed, the stop towards inside five. It seemed like, especially in the second half, especially the second half,
we talk a ton about playing complementary football. You know, how the offense affects the defense affects the offense, how teams affects everything. You know, you look at that Western Michigan offense, they went up and down the field against a lot of people this year. And our defense did an outstanding job of just putting ourselves in a position to win the game. I mean, 10 points going into the fourth quarter. That's the same offense that just scored 44 against a Power 5 ACC team, I think, on the road. So our defense did a great job of keeping us very much right in the middle of the game. Our defensive line allowed us to play really a two-high shell look, winning at the line of scrimmage and playing a gap and a half. And we were able to stop the run all night with our defensive line doing a great job. Backers field the runs. And I think a series of, just kind of right back out there again when you don't really have the movement that you want on offense and kind of having to go back on defense. I think physically and also psychologically, you got to stay, keep your mind in it where you have to kind of respond even though the complimentary football is not taking place. You got to respond and still get off the field. You know, on defense, you can't always control how you got to get on the field, but you got to control how you get off. A couple of plays we'd probably like to have back when it didn't happen in the fourth quarter. But 10 points going into the last, minutes of the game, our defense really did a good job of holding strong against a very talented Western Michigan offense.
Could I be right? I've got Holly Burns from the fourth quarter. Maybe you should
have
penalized on that?
Yeah, I can't make those decisions. I mean, the refs are going to call it. I didn't see it. But regardless, we talk to our players about poise, about having poise in critical situations. Regardless of, you know, what you do is in football is you control what you can control. You know, one thing that we can control is our preparation. We can control our attitude and our mindset every day. We control our performance. We control how we respond to critical situations. We control what type of teammates we want to be. We control, we're going to control how we respond from this very tough situation. You know, every talented championship level team at the end of it has a story of grit and toughness. We have to know how to respond to hurtful, painful situations, and we will. We'll stay connected. We'll stay together as a family. We'll watch the film, and we'll be very honest and have real accountability in our locker room, starting with the person that you're looking at first. And then we'll change our best, and we'll correct what we have to correct.
Were you given an explanation on that penalty?
Was not given an explanation.
Well, if I'm right, what were some of the flaws that you were trying to take advantage of that you've seen the previous
Well, I wouldn't say flaws. I think when you start a new opponent, what you look at is, you know, you ask yourself, what are the strengths? What are the areas that you feel like you can take advantage of? What do we have to do to win this football game? You know, every team has a little bit of a different DNA and thumbprint, and you kind of start putting your plan together. Look at matchups. You look at, you know, kind of what front you want to be in defense and how you want to move the ball on offense. Western Michigan came off of, you know, 3-1, beat San Jose State. That was very good at home. They beat Pitt, which is going to probably be playing, you know, postseason play this year at a Power 5 opponent. And they did well against a FCS non-conference opponent. They're good. They have a good team, good offense, and so are we. When we started the week off, we knew we had to stop the run. We knew they were an RPO team. We did that pretty successfully. And then on offense, we wanted to make an emphasis on running the ball. We did that in the first half. We didn't get that done as much in the second half. But we knew we had to control the clock, and the kicking game was going to be a big factor. When you go into games and you're 10-10 in the fourth quarter, I think both teams can realistically say that you know, their plan in terms of execution, we had a flaw. I'm not sure to say we had a flaw. What we're going to look at is, you know, what we're asking players to do and who we're asking to do what, and making sure that we get the, you know, ball in the right hands and put ourselves in the right position.
Coach, just thinking about the week of preparation going into the matchup, you know, what was it like preparing for a quarterback like Caleb Ellaby? You know, he's been able to have a strong start to the season, and you guys were able to knock him off rhythm early, but he found his rhythm late in the game.
Yeah, I mean, preparation, you know, kind of what we kind of spoke to a little bit before. It's just, you know, when you have a talented quarterback that can run and throw, you know, kind of adds a little bit of a different element to your game plan. I thought our safeties did a good job all game, kind of holding the coverage disguises. And, you know, Western Michigan is a big check with me team. They go back to the sideline and get themselves in the perfect play. So coverage disguise was a big emphasis in terms of what looks we were going to show pre-snap to indicate what type of plays we were possibly going to get to counter that to how we were going to drop a safety or blitz a guy late. And that was part of the chess message just in terms of coaching. Look over the fourth quarter, 10 points. I would say that you know, our preparation was the right way on that side of the ball in terms of our defensive approach. And we knew that we were going to have to manufacture some turn out some first downs in that second half to move the field and flip the field. The field position battle was a kind of a big factor all game. They missed a field goal, and then they forced a sack where we could have got a field goal off of it. You know, it's a heavyweight fight. Two heavyweights kind of throwing punches back and forth. And then we had a critical penalty in the fourth quarter that kind of put us in a bad position. But at the same time, you got to respond. You know, you have to have the poise, and you have to have a response to that critical situation the right way.
I'm also just thinking about, you know, you guys, 2-3 record, but just in those three losses, there are plays that you guys could have made that really could have flipped the script. Right. You're just thinking about how close you guys are. You know, what do you think it is that's going to take the team needs to do to be able to take that next step forward?
I think every single person just assess their job responsibilities, make sure we have clarity in our job responsibilities. You know, as a player, their job is to prepare and perform. My job is to teach and remain in a healthy, right way. And everything starts with me first. So we're going to make sure that the right things are being taught, that the culture and the connection in the locker room stays strong. We have a locker room that is very accountable. There's a lot of trust in there. We're going to make sure that we continue with that accountability and trust, and then make sure that from the football aspect and the X's and O's piece of it, that we're just putting our players in the right position. So everything starts with me, and we're going to make sure that our coaches have clarity in their responsibilities so the players can have clarity in their responsibilities so we can go out there and perform and become the team that I really believe that we're capable of becoming. You know, one of the hardest things as you go through a season is sometimes when you don't get the first result that you want to get distracted. And then we're going to make sure we don't get distracted, make sure we stay focused and continue to take the necessary steps to grow, to change change our best and to become what we're capable of becoming. It only happens through hard work and consistency.
Did it factor in? Did you
go against the program? That's the type of mentality we want to have. You know, wanted to be on us, wanted to be those guys on the team, and be known as a great defensive team. And that's the type of standard we have to keep progressing with, and it's on me to keep pushing it.
Just thinking about the last week, you mentioned communication as being lack thereof. You know, the ODU game, and especially in the second half. What do you think the communication level was like today?
It was great, though. Even though it was really when everybody was on the same page, you know, it was really no miscommunication. Nobody on one page, and everybody was on the other. It was really great communication.
Does it sometimes get frustrating when a team kind of churns out those long drives and time possession almost felt like an army game at times, right? Is it hard not to sort of fight that frustration as a defensive group?
No, you know, that's the type of mentality we've been trying to create around here, you know, just respond and just try to stop them. You know, don't really worry about what's going on. Just play the next down, and we get to the film correctly.
Did you listen to the team play back during those last few drives? That's stop. And then later, they were just
No, a big part, but at the same time, like I said, it can't be an issue. We have to really stand up and make a play for our team. When they're down, we should make a play for them. And when we're down, they should make a play for us, right, Chris?
Game plan, it was to establish a run game that was going to be able to lean on their front seven, make them make plays, and then be able to throw the ball over top, make their secondary cover us, make their secondary tackle. We did a decent job of that. Good majority of the game, but we just couldn't do it when counting.
I was just thinking of, you know, the second half was, you know, it seemed like things were a little bit stagnant. You know, just what were you seeing out there in terms of, was it a mix up in coverages? Were they, you know, sending different stunts and blitzes? What do you think it was that was, you know, contributing to some of that?
I mean, it's nothing we haven't seen before, nothing we haven't prepared for. It's just, you know, execution. It's really all it comes down to. Everybody's got to be able to do their job. Everybody's got to be on the same page. Got to minimize the amount of mistakes. Put yourself in the best position to be successful. We have a few here and there that's either a negative play or no gain. Shut down the drive.
Just also thinking about the passing game, you know, obviously there's been some ups and downs, but one constant has been Keon Williams. You know, for you, you know, to be able to have someone who's had experience in this league, or in this conference especially, to be able to come over and be really a reliable target for you, you know, what has that been like?
Yeah, I'm really proud of Keon, everything he's done since he's gotten here. Just put his head down and gotten to work. The receiver room has embraced him, and he's embraced us as an offense. And he's a good leader. He's a great, hard worker. He's going to go make plays. I'm really proud of everything that he's done. But it's really nice to be able to have that kind of athlete, that kind of player out there on the field, because it opens up everything else.
Carl, at one point in the second half, there were four drives and he was 3 yards into one place. Yeah, what's it going to take to maximize those drives, lengthen them, produce more out of it?
It's execution. Like I just said, it's execution. That's all it is. In our preparation, we have to prepare every single rep, not just every single practice, but every single rep to dominate the guy across from us. Whether it's scout team, whether that's good on good or one on one, if we're going against the defense. So when it comes to games, having my mindset and mentality is dominating the guy across from us.
Why did that happen today, though?
Just minimal mistakes. We didn't put ourselves in bad positions.
Now, what's the biggest challenge
at that frustration?
Is it me? Lack
of execution is definitely the struggle, but it's the mental frustration and getting away from the mental frustration. That's the hardest part, and getting everybody away from that and pushing it behind us, squashing it, flushing it. Because the next play is the most important play. And you got to have that mindset. No matter if it's a good play, bad play, ugly play, doesn't matter. You got to go on to the next one. Yeah, no, they didn't really do much else different. Like I said, we prepared and we've seen just about everything we have, everything they did. So, it's just the execution. Everyone's got to do their job, and everyone's got to, that's the one thing about offense is everyone has to do their job for the play to be successful. On defense, someone makes a mistake, another person can come make a great tackle or a great, pass breakup or something like that, So, on offense, it's 11-man football, and we have to be a strong unit to be able to go out and work out successfully. Yeah, everything works in tandem. Offense and defense is we gotta keep them off the field because especially in an offense like theirs where they're gonna check every play and they're gonna keep you on the field for long periods of time. It's not complimentary football when we leave them on the field and we go 3-and-out. So we have to pick that up as an offense. Ultimately, that comes down to me, forcing and willing this offense to get a first down to continue with the drive. But we just got to be collectively better so that we can play better complimentary football.
Alrighty, y'all. So just looking ahead to this Kent State matchup, obviously it's two teams that are in similar positions. Both the Bulls and the Golden Flashes are sitting at 2-3 on the season. But this is a big matchup for UB because Kent State is coming off a win in its MAC opener. Whereas obviously we just talked about, UB's loss to Western Michigan. So, the Golden Flashes are coming off a 27-20 victory over Bowling Green, where they were able to lean heavily on the running game, with Marquez Cooper finished with 120 rushing yards and two touchdowns, as well as Dustin Crum finishing with 93 yards and two touchdowns, or a touchdown of his own. The Golden Flashes rushed for 262 yards as a team that day. So, there's just a few different questions I have coming in about this game. Just first and foremost, before I get to the questions, just thinking about Kent State, their record is a bit misleading. They, in three of their first four games of the season, they played against a team that was either ranked or undefeated at the time of playing them. So, the Golden Flashes opened the season at Texas A&M. A&M is, definitely one of the teams to watch out for throughout all the country. So that's a tough matchup for any program, let alone a MAC school. Then also, the Golden Flashes were able to get a win over VMI, the FCS program. But, then at the time, Kent State played Iowa, who was fifth. And then the following week, they were matched up against Maryland, who was undefeated at the time. So, like I said, the record is a little misleading. This is a good football team. Obviously getting the win last week kind of bolsters that, but at the same time too, this is a team that UB should definitely not be sleeping on, and I think is, it should be a pretty pretty fair matchup, just thinking about where both programs are coming into the matchup. So, but like I said, I have a couple different questions. The first question that I have is, will UB be able to stop the run? Obviously I talked about Cooper and Crum, what they've been able to put together, what they were able to put together as a tandem last week. Just thinking about this, and I know I touched on this a little bit in the last episode, but just thinking about since the start of the Nebraska game for UB, the program is allowing 211.3 yards rushing per game. And, as I mentioned, Kent State to be able to put up over 260 last week, that's something that the, those are two trends that you don't want to see coming into a matchup. You know, one team going in one direction with that unit in terms of stopping the run. You know, they were able to hold Western Michigan to, 178. Obviously, that's not ideal. Thinking of just what UB has been on the defensive side of the ball over the last few years. And, you know, they were Ladarius Jefferson finished with 96 yards himself against the Bulls. But just thinking of Sean Tyler as well, Sean Tyler had 80 yards rushing in the game. So, you know, those two guys, to see a tandem backfield be able to step up against the Bulls last week, you know, that's something that's got to give you some pause coming into this matchup as well. And you know, just thinking about the other side of the ball now, sticking with the theme of the running game, UB has lost a bit of its luster with the run rushing attack in the last two games, I'll say specifically. So my question is, can UB get back to running the ball, you know, against Western Michigan? You know, as I mentioned, you know, the team only totaled 131 yards. So, you know, you subtract 55 yards from that that Cook touchdown, that's I believe that's 86 yards rushing then as a team. You know, so that's definitely not ideal. And even the week before against ODU, UB only totaled 106 rushing yards in that game. So it's challenging, you know, to see, because this has been a program that's historically been built off the running game. And I think this is a very unique point too, because you know, there have been times where there have been viable guys behind the starter. Obviously, you know, seeing Kevin Marks sit behind a guy like Jarrett Patterson over there, seeing Anthony Taylor behind Brandon Oliver or Jordan Johnson behind those guys, or, you know, just thinking of some of those names that came along the way and waited their turn and, you know, eventually were given the keys and were asked to be the man. But, you know, this is a backfield with, I think, three guys at the minimum who can really make an impact, you know, especially with, you know, Marks. He's obviously his career as a Bull has been stated, but just seeing what Dylan McDuffie has been able to do putting together, you know, he's been a really strong option out of the backfield. So, you know, you would like to see the offense getting back to that, especially with seeing the success the team had rushing the ball against Coastal Carolina. UB rushed for 262 yards, ironically, the same number Kent State rushed against Bowling Green. But, you know, just seeing how much success the Bulls were able to have against, you know, a top 20 program, I think it's something that they need to be able to reestablish to get back on track. And then lastly, just thinking, you know, of reestablishing things again, you know, will the Bulls be able to revive the passing attack? You know, Kyle Van Treese, he's definitely one of the best quarterbacks in the MAC. You know, he's currently ranked fourth overall in passing yards. But, you know, the last handful of weeks have been tough for him. He's had three straight games under 200 yards passing. And, you know, to be specific, he's averaging 162.7 yards per game in those three games. And, you know, two of those three games have been losses for the Bulls. And, you know, even just thinking about the ODU game, you know, the bulk of his yardage came in that second quarter. And, you know, outside of that, it was tough sledding. So, you know, just want to be able to see what UB can do in a matchup like this, you know, but also too, you know, thinking about like what I just mentioned about Van Treese, I'm really excited to see him going up against this secondary, especially with Keon Williams outside and, you know, Dominic Johnson also, you know, providing as a nice compliment to him. But this is probably the best corner duo in the MAC. With Elvis Hines and Montre Miller. Both guys have three picks each this season. So, you know, some ball hawks that can really make a play on it if Kyle Van Treese gives them the chance to do so. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Kyle Van Treese is able to still attack those guys, but at the same time to play it smart and not put the ball too heavily in harm's way. So, you know, should be a fun matchup. You know, I think with UB, just knowing that the team has really gotten to a point now where it's like, okay, hey, You know, we got through non-conference play. Conference play is here now. MAC play, some action is going on. Let's see if we can, you know, get back to what we started, you know, earlier in the season. Obviously, the Wagner win was tremendous. But, you know, no team on the rest of the slate will be comparable to Wagner. So to see the Bulls get the win against ODU, but, you know, have such high highs, but then some lows in the second half and some going through some lows and, you know, really just losing momentum. But, you know, on the flip side of it, too, you know, to think that a program that is 2-3 is probably still just getting to its peak. You know, it's still climbing, it's still ascending. And, you know, even at 2-3, there's a lot of promise and a lot of hope for what this team can look like and can get to, the level it can get to before the season's over. You know, I think Molinguist is at a point too where he's really, yes, he's establishing himself, but he sees that too. He sees that, hey, you know, we might not be pulling out these wins necessarily at the moment, but at the same time, it's all just laying the bricks and establishing the foundation for what he wants this program to be and how he's envisioned it and just how he's going to take those steps to get there. And, you know, like I said, there's just a little few little tweaks here and there that the program, not the program as a whole, but just in terms of the play and being able to finish out the results of these games and to be able to come out on top. There's just a couple little minor things I think the team needs to fix, but you know, they're right there. The Bulls are right there. And I know at 2-3, you guys are thinking, oh man, we can't be going back to those days where, you know, we were winning 3-4 games in the season, things like that. But I think UB is at a point where, hey, you know, it might look tough right now, but there's still a lot of season left. And, you know, the Bulls really can make up some ground. They could still make it all the way to Detroit as well. So, you know, don't panic after one MAC game. There's definitely still a lot of time. So we'll see how it all plays out. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, great game Saturday night. I believe it's a 7 p.m. start, which will be great to see. Yes, it's a 7 p.m. start on ESPNU. So, you know, some pretty big national coverage for this matchup. And, you know, hey, this is a game that, like I mentioned before, it's not a must-win game, but it's a game that for UB's aspirations of wanting to get back to the MAC title game, this is a game that the Bulls will need to take care of, you know, so they're not digging themselves out of an 0-2 hole, you know, with Ohio the following week. So, again, guys, I thank you as always for checking in with me and with the Bulls. You know, it's always a pleasure, and you know, I'm definitely excited to see what the rest of this Bulls season brings. You know, obviously when you come in and you finish the first month of the season, there's a lot of reflection and thoughts into, you know, what has happened and what will happen. And you know, yes, like I mentioned before, the Bulls have had some ups and downs, but to be honest, to think where this program is with, you know, how quickly Molinguist had to transition over and take this gig on, I think they're going to be just fine. So, you know, we'll definitely stay tuned and keep you guys posted on everything. So, as always, my friends, it's been a pleasure. This is Kyrie Demos signing off. I'll check in with you guys very, very soon. Stay tuned and horns up.
And before I let you guys go, today's episode was presented to you by Bet Online. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.